Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free, or there'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. So Andrew and I were both at the Celtic Hibs Cup League Cup game today. Did you enjoy the game, Andrew?
I did, and what amazed me as much as anything else was the size of the crowd. That must be, what was it, and I don't know if there was an official attendance given. I thought to myself maybe 52, 53, I was thinking, in that vicinity. That must be the highest crowd Celtic have ever had for their opening round of a League Cup. I would wager that. I can't think of them having a sellout crowd for their first excursion in a League Cup campaign ever.
Hibs brought a decent size support.
They didn't actually, because I could see them because I was over in the North Stand today. You know, I'm doing a tour of the stadium now, it seems. I was up the Lisbon Lions. I'm at the main stand for Rangers, and I was at the North Stand. I just need the Jock Steen to complete the set. It's funny seeing all these different vantage points. You know, there's nothing beats the main stand. It has to be said, there is absolutely nothing beats the main stand.
I'm North Stand upper, directly opposite the tunnel, and I've been in the main stand, and I'm quite happy to go back to my North Stand upper, directly opposite the tunnel.
All right, but see, like, can you imagine if you're a journalist, and there was some chat that they were maybe moving the press facilities over to the North Stand, which would be quite interesting. But imagine you're a journalist and you sit in the old stand, the old main stand, and you look out and you see these stunning vistas. But whereas if you sit in any other part of the stadium, you always see that tiny little relic of a stand, that anachronism, as you so eloquently kind of set out in your piece last week in Celtic Underground. You know, so you never quite get the full value. The only way you get the full value of the stadium as it is, the best of it, is being in the old main stand.
I wouldn't change my vantage point, but you enjoyed it. Do you know, I always, Hibs are my favourite team for us to play at Celtic Park, because right. I think Hibs still don't have the wee team mentality. So Hibs still turn up, and no matter who the Hibs manager is, they still never stick every single person behind. They don't do a Denny McInnes of, I'm just going to stick everybody behind the ball and do nothing. So there's always, the reason I enjoy it is because there's always subsequently loads of space for us to play into and score lots of goals against Hibs.
It's anathema to them. They can't. Their support don't allow them to play that way. Their kind of whole kind of ethos, which is kind of Celtic-y in a lot of ways, isn't it? There's a Hibs way of playing. There's a Celtic way of playing, and it, as you say, it doesn't amount to parting the bus. That's just no. Sometimes they just seem to be guys falling off the bus, you know, as the bus is spinning round the pitch, kind of thing. You know, there's a bit of that. You know, it's like on the buses. was on the buses.
Reference for the kids there. Yes. So the only change in the team was Maeda through the middle, and I on a WhatsApp group and people going, "Oh, it's Maeda through the middle," and I never understand. I mean, I've seen before where Brendan has said, "Well, if we've got injuries, Maeda will play through the middle." And people say, "Oh, can he do that?" Well, he plays through the middle for Japan, and when we signed him, he was playing through the middle. He was a top scorer in the Japanese League Player of the Year, and played through the middle. And Kyogo was playing wide left for the team he played for. So I've never quite understood. Can he do that? He's just not got the ability. Say guys whose most elite level was third year in the school team. You know,
But when you think about it, this new improved kind of Brendan 2.0 kind of version of Celtic that we thought we were going to see last year, but we're definitely seeing it this year. It's like Maed is the perfect guy to play through the middle because, as Brendan kept talking about up in the post-match stuff, about the counter-press. It was counter-press was so good. You know, when you think about that second goal, it was all about that, just that drive that Maeda has in abundance. I mean, he is genuinely one of those players that, you know, he would chase a crisp open, a kind of kind of windy day they talk about. And I said that to somebody at the game, and they said, you know, the thing is, he said, he would catch that crisp hope, wasn't he? Not just chasing the crisp hope, he would actually catch the damn crisp hope.
So, first goal, it was very similar to the game at Easter Road in many ways, in that first goal's really early on.
Yeah.
Sort of settles everybody down because we've scored early. You know Hibs are not really going to come and score two goals. So that's that. Then we get the second goal. And at that point, first 20, 25 minutes, we're playing really well, really lively. Yeah. And it's almost as if the team go, well, that's it. Game's won. It's 2-0.
There was an element of that. Because actually, another guy that was standing sitting next to us when it was the VAR assessment of the Hibs goal, he says, I hope this stands. He says, because it keeps the Celtic team honest. Because there was as you say, it was the game won at that point, so they had to step it back up again. It was just, it gave them the kind of zap to go again. And they did in the second half. They never really let it drop, really.
Yeah.
And again, Hibs really didn't get out.
What did you make of the Hibs goal? Because it came from a booking for Carter Vickers, which was right in front of me, and you had been close to it in the North Stand.
Yeah, I was right in front of me as well.
I didn't think it was a booking. In fact, I wasn't even sure it was a foul. Subsequently, my brother sent me a message. He's watched it back and says it was a foul. Not a booking, but it was a foul.
Right.
But the thing is, the Hibs player who went writhing around as if he'd just been decapitated was the guy who scored the header, I think. So.
Oh, right. It was a great header. Even Brendan Rodgers acknowledged that in his post-match. He said, we accept that because it was a phenomenal header, because the guys were looking at their phone again along the row for me kind of thing. So I got to see it again, and it was a smashing header. So you accept, you know, it was a set piece header. You don't really want to be losing those kind of goals. But if you produce a header as kind of pristine as that, it's always a possibility. Because I thought actually, because it was like floating like a bubble, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you thought, Schmeichel's position, could he not kind of scramble across? But I think I was unfair to him at the time. I haven't watched that again.
Yeah, it's coming. It's out that side, so he's got to be covering it in the near post. And then it's a sort of, my memory, because I've not watched it back, is it's a bit loopy as well. So
really
at the high
loopy.
Point over, yeah, so at the high point above him, he's got no chance, and then it's just in the far corner.
Yeah.
I don't know what your thoughts were. I thought we might have played the Finnish goalkeeper because it was a cup game.
There was a lot of chat about that in Twitter beforehand, but clearly he wants to. I wonder to myself, maybe I'm being too twisted thinking about this. Is he trying to play this team and say, this is the best 11, but it's really the only 11 I want to go with? You need to give me players that are going to change my mind and thinking that this isn't the 11 players I play all the time. That was the first change that Rodgers had made in 3 games. So that was and it was enforced. It was an enforced change. I suppose if Kyogo had been fit, you would imagine that Forrest would drop to the bench and Maeda would come around on the left. So it's no right to say that if everybody had been fit, he would have gone with the same team for the third time. I'm not sure that would have been the case, because I think he wanted to kind of. Get Maeda up to speed. If that was his first game of the season, it's like you can hardly say he looked rusty, did he?
No,
because I don't think he's played since that taking that knock against Chelsea, has he?
No, he was on the bench last week, but that was it.
Right.
So yeah, he's just a. You know, as they always say, he's a Duracell bunny. He just keeps running and running and running, and So overall, what did you think of the performance?
I thought it was good. Maybe it didn't scale the heights of the Kilmarnock game, but it was maybe a more even performance than Easter Road away, which started like a train. But this great thing, it's great to see Celtic having fast starts. I remember Ange getting a wee bit annoyed at me because I worked out all these stats, and Celtic went about 3 months when they only scored once in the first half of games. You know, it was wearing teams down, and that's all very well. But you want to have something to show for your dominance over teams. Yep. I mean, that's what, if you remember, in the old tiki-taki kind of era, Spain and all that, when they won that World Cup, and it was only just single goal wins because they were just wearing teams down. You want a bit more than that, and this team's giving you a bit more than that. They're giving you early goals. I'm going to confess here, a bit of an argument with my boy, and we didn't end up leaving, driving down to 2:10, and it took me 49 minutes. I missed the first goal. I was running, so I was watching it at a snack bar, you know, because it was, you thought, I'm not running up to this. I'm not running up to my seat. I get a much better view of it seeing it here, you know. So that's how early Celtic are scoring. I'm missing goals now, you know.
but I think if Celtic score early, it knackers the opposition, because you know, the teams come to Celtic Park with one tactic, which is don't lose a goal and see if we can do something in the last 10 minutes. That's pretty much. I'm simplifying, but that's and I'm not, you know, not blaming them. The differential between us and them is enormous. So it's reasonable. Yeah,
likewise.
But it just knackers their whole system if we score early goals.
Yeah.
Because I often think if we were at a game, we were, say, 3 up at halftime, how would I deal with that if I'm an opposition manager? Do you do that thing of let's win the second half or let's not lose? You know, do you go for the moral victory of let's not lose the second half? Or, you know, real dilemma. But
Is it just me as well, but the kind of hated horseshoe seems to be gone. Have you seen Celtic across the three games? Like, from right back, centre back, left back, centre back, right back, centre back. You know that, remember they used to try and pull teams?
Yeah.
Both, that happened both under Rodgers last season early on. I mean, when you think about the house, Celtic are a class above where they were this time last year. We're much the same players.
Yeah, although at half time we were looking at the people warming up, and I said, "See the problem Brendan had at the beginning of last season," and we went through, and I was like, "So Welsh was starting games, Ralston was starting games, who else was on? Yang was starting games. There was somebody else. Virtually the whole substitute Palmer was starting games. Virtually the whole." Holmes started games. Bernardo started games. Virtually the whole bench was starting games last season.
Yeah.
At this stage of last season, and I was saying that's the benefit of having. We forget how much of an injured and squad that we had last season, because 4 or 5 of those people in any one game, any one week for the first 3-4 months of last season, 4 or 5 of those subs were starting games. Plus people like Laka Bielka, who can't even now make the bench, was starting games last season. Yeah. So that's one of the differences in terms of what he's got to go with. I also noticed at the end of last season, you were saying about the horseshoe of death. We're doing this thing of a sort of a, it's like a V-shaped thing where someone gets it, centre-half or midfielder, playing it to some either Hitati or O'Reilly, who've got their back to goal, who they immediately then just play it back to that person, but they've moved round. So there's this sort of V, just to do a bit more of moving forward, the opposition around on it. I was thinking today watching that game, Matt O'Reilly's what, 22, 23?
23, yeah.
He knows that we have had a £25 million bid in from Brighton. And he knows that we've had £20 million in from Atalanta. So he knows all that's going on.
Yeah.
I think that he must have a pretty screwed-on head that he's able to turn up on the pitch and just perform as normal with all that going on, buzzing around.
All he said. you know, I wrote about it the other week for Celtic Underground. You know about he was talking about how he'd started to meditate, and he is a genuinely deep thinker. He's genuinely quite a kind of complex, which can have its own issues, but that complexity to be able to kind of clear his head, like but you know, like having a complex enough of a character to know that, you know, I deal with what I can deal with. And I mean, there was a, to me, I did say it when we were saying that O'Reilly might stay when we wrote that, we had that piece the other week. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons was because I didn't think he would push it. You look at Ida, for instance, look at what Ida did down in Norwich. You know what I mean? He was at it. If O'Reilly started to be at it, then you can kind of force yourself out the door. We've seen it before. But because he's know that, it was quite interesting seeing one of the Italian sources today saying he's tired of the push and pull about that Atlanta thing. Never mind that whether or not they've kind of given up on it. He can't be bothered with it anymore now either.
Well, I understand Brighton came in at 25 million quid, but he didn't want to go to Brighton.
Yeah.
And we went back to Atalanta and said, see your 18 million, it's not good enough because Brighton are prepared to go to 25, so that's our benchmark. And Atalanta said, all right then, 18.5. And we said, no, because like, we've got a benchmark of 25 million. Oh, okay then, 19. Yeah. No, we've got 25 million. Oh, well, we'll go to 20, but that's our top offer.
Do you know what I think's happened? Atalanta said, God, there's a guy came for that Scottish League. He's done really well here, that Lewis Ferguson. How much did they pay for him? How much did Bologna pay for him? We should be able to get this guy for something the same. They don't even think about the size of the club or anything like that. All right. He went for 3 million. Oh, so we give them six. I read somewhere that they thought there would nothing else like, they would, like Celtic would bite their hand off for 14 million. I think we've totally misjudged all this.
Yeah.
The penny might have dropped when they think, whoa, Celtic are spending nearly 10 million on a striker. Oh, they know that tin pot. Those tin pots, maybe we thought.
Yeah. The accountant's in the back going, they've got £70 million in the bank. They might not be desperate for this money. No club's got 70 million. No clubs have got any in the bank. Shut up.
Although Atalanta are the kind of Italian, although they're on a much smaller scale. I mean, I was telling the guys around me today, they were all shocked. Atalanta Stadium holds 15,000, which is it's kind of Rugby Park, roughly about the same size as Rugby Park. I mean, I know they are the Europa League winners, and you know they're in the Champions League, but they're not a big club.
No, but it's just that, and that just demonstrates the challenge that we've got of being this. I mean, actually, so somebody sent me a message on the way home about Brendan's just behaving like he's the boss of Scottish football. Like,
he would dispense his wisdom and dispense his knowledge, and you know what I mean? It was like, I am here to lead you out of the wilderness.
Yes. It's good to hear that John McGlynn is coming to speak to me because he was one of my disciples back in the day.
Yeah, I broke bread with John.
But the thing is,
John McGlynn's a great guy. He's a great John McGlynn.
But at the moment, I was actually saying, I think this is, I've not felt this, and I know this could sound blasé, so I might restrict it to only paid subscribers who can hear this, because you don't want any Rangers fans listening and playing it back. But I have never felt so utterly confident that we will win two, but probably three trophies this season since the last time Brendan was here. Since the first couple of seasons. I just feel at the moment, I mean, obviously O'Reilly could go, in the next 2 weeks we could lose O'Reilly and somebody could then come in with a silly offer for Hatate or Kyogo that is just so crazy that we think, accept it. And you might end up with a big giant hole in the middle of the team and it takes us a month or two to sort it out. And, you know, something like that could happen. But as things stand at the moment, you know, particularly with the utter mess of the only other team in Scottish football who've got the who could possibly generate the financial wherewithal to compete with us. They're in such, I mean, we were debating at the game today who'll be the first manager to leave. Will it be the Hibs manager or the Rangers manager this season?
Probably not be the Rangers manager, because they just can't rinse repeat. They just can't keep doing that. They can't keep doing
Hibs rinse and repeat as well. Both of those clubs need to go, right, do you know what? They either decide this manager's the guy, or they need to get rid of this manager and then bring in a guy and say, this is it, we are no longer in rinse-repeat mode no matter what happens. Both of them. I mean, not that I need to give them advice as to who to be better at, but both of them.
No, I agree with you. It almost feels, it was quiet, almost too quiet. You know what I mean? It's like, it feels like, everything's so rosy. Too rosy.
Actually, we were talking about the game. All you need really is for us to pull a couple of things, is to buy a left back and a centre half, or bring in, we're not going to buy a left back because we're going to bring him on, because obviously with Tierney coming next summer likely, we just need to, that's why we're now looking for a loan for the left back, just to make do and mend until he's here. But sign a decent left back, sign a decent left-sided centre-half in the next 2 weeks. And it would almost be like, those, you know, it's like the famous only an excuse thing where Jim McLean was pissed off because he had nothing to complain about, you know?
There'd
be a section of the Celtic support on social media that'd be raging with the fact that they've got nothing to rage about.
I know. I'll tell you, it was like after everything, after the kind of rage about are you dying and all that? And the guy comes on. I know he's undercooked because he's not much of a pre-season. You think somebody, again, round about us, there's quite a few of them know each other, so that's why there's a lot of different chat. And one of them says, my God, it's like, we've spent a record fee on a guy who right now, when he come on, and didn't quite click for him today. He thought, Celtic have spent a record fee on their third choice striker. You know? What an Eric Celtic you think you do?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, we've spent more money than we've ever spent before on a guy who's not going to be first choice.
No. But as I say, it's quite evidence of today, he didn't look second choice.
No, but I think you'll get it right. And actually, there was two things that happened today. One, our third goal was the type of goal that I see. I was talking to Paul, who sits next to me, and I was saying, that's the type of goal that I see Rangers getting. And you're raging at the telly saying, teams don't do that against us. Well, Hibs just did. He then says, no, that's the type of goal that we used to lose in Europe.
Regularly.
We were discussing if Ida scores in the Champions League this season, you're going to be a Norwich fan sitting at home going, that guy, couldn't he get a first team game for us? And he's scored Champions League. Celtic have spent all this money and he's scored Champions League football. You'd be raging, actually. It would be that thing of that you can imagine the Norwich fans online going, how did we miss this? I mean, if he ends up scoring, say, 15 goals for us this season, but say he scores 3 in the Champions League, just, you know, not setting the heather on fire, but a couple, you can imagine Norwich social media going bonkers about how did they let this guy go?
Although if he scored 3 goals for Celtic in a Champions League campaign, you know, like I would be garlanding him with, you know what I mean, gold leaves at his feet, because Larsson couldn't do that, no, in one season, you know.
Samaras could, though. He could be another Samaras who just scores. Because I mean, actually, virtually all his goals have been big-time goals. Winning the Scottish Cup, the third goal at Ibrox, the goals that I think was the turning point in the league against Motherwell.
Motherwell was that.
And at Easter Road, scoring that last minute penalty. I mean, the pressure under him to score His goals for Celtic have actually been, in general, big game goals.
No, they have. They have. I mean, whereas he looked rusty, I thought the opposite you could say. I thought Bernardo was really impressive. I know it was only the last 20 minutes, but I thought, and his kind of forging, that was set up. There was one that was, he set up a great chance. Was it, and then it came across to Yang. And O'Reilly tried to kind of, he tried to wrap his foot around it and he put it miles wide, but he should have just put it in the corner. That was a great move again. Bernardo looked on it when he came off the bench.
Yeah, and one of the things I said about the Scottish Cup final goal was the difference with Bernardo compared to any other midfielder. None of our other midfielders would have run at the Rangers' defence in a straight line with the ball.
No.
They would have run for 10 yards, and I'm not criticising, and laid it off wide.
Yeah.
So in terms of a midfielder that offers something different to McGregor, Hatate and O'Reilly, Bernardo does that because he's running at people with the ball.
Yeah, he's a kind of burrower. He's a burrower. They don't really have a burrower, you know, in terms of kind of ball-carrying burrower. But that's what I see for him. And also, breaking up play, he's a bit more kind of physical, I'd say, than the rest of them. Because, I know he did well on occasions today, but there was a couple of occasions seeing McGregor kind of lose out in the kind of physical duels. And I thought, God, I've seen that in Europe a few times. Can he be something he's no? You know, he's 5 foot nine or whatever, you know, and he's quite a slight frame.
So that was today's game. We've got Falkirk in the next round at home, which, you know, all you can ask for is a home game. I did think it would be interesting in terms of away support if we'd have got Rangers away at Hampden. And this, here's a dilemma, right? Tell me, I know what I would do if I was running Celtic.
At least there'd be fans in the Celtic end of Hampden for the first time.
Well, I was going to say they could stick us in because they obviously don't want. I mean, I just think it's so stereotypical of what's going on in the world just now. I'm no going in the Celtic end.
Yeah, I can't even remember.
But it's not really.
I know. I was trying to think back to 93, 94 and think. I don't think that was the case at Hampden.
I don't remember. No, us not going in the Rangers end. But so Rangers don't have Ibrox ready, right? Say, and the League Cup semi-finals come around, and we draw Rangers. If I was running Celtic, I'd insist on a toss of a coin as to which ground it gets played on. Because if that happens, by that point, that'll be near home ground for whatever it is, 3-4 months. So I'd be saying it's not a neutral venue, so we need to have a toss of a coin. And last time we had a toss of a coin, actually, it was Ibrox. So we don't need to have a toss of a coin when Joe Jordan lost it. Remember, they tossed the coin. Heads at Celtic. Oh, sorry. It's best of three.
I know. Walter just said that to him, best of three, and Joe just went, aye, okay.
That was 93. That was during the decampment. So, based on that, should we insist it's a toss of a coin? And not play a hand?
They must have factored this in. Or maybe they didn't, because they didn't expect.
I wouldn't have thought so, because it's all been last minute. Rangers keep saying they'll be back in by middle of October.
Do you think, I suppose, at the SFA, nobody or other clubs had to approve it? So, but this isn't an SFA competition, mind you. This is a league competition.
Yeah, so the issue might be, I think the League Cup is contracted to take place at semi-finals and finals at Hampden.
It is because they're desperate to recoup because they paid, you know, because they now own Hampden, so they need to make it work for them.
Yeah, but just whether... You know, if it was me and I was running Celtic, I would be like, toss a coin.
Just stir the pot anyway and say it. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, they might not get through. They've got Dundee who are romping everything at the moment. So they've got Dundee in the cup. And as I put on Twitter, I always remember my first season book at Celtic Park was in the back of the main stand, right at the back. There was a guy next to me every time Falkirk were mentioned. He used to rail against Falkirk. Back in the 60s, they had a Union Jack that was bigger than Ibrox. It was enormous. Used to make the flagpole bend over double and all this stuff. So if that guy's still alive, I mean, it was 35 years ago. If he's still with us, he'll be If not, he'll be turning in his grave about the fact we're playing Falkirk. He hates the Falkirk.
Because they've been a long time out of top-flight football. They are one of the bigger clubs as well. If you were redrawing it, if you were creating a kind of top 14 purely on trying to get the biggest 14 Scottish clubs, they'd be there, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember once looking, you know, just one night, just fiddling about on Wikipedia and stuff like that, thinking, right, if you were to do more of an American model on Scottish football, try and make it economically viable, and you just picked teams, you would just say, right, okay, we're going to have principally teams in the big towns, biggest towns and cities. You're going to have a team in the top. If you get a team, right, you're in the top flight. So East Kilbride would be a struggle. You'd need to try and get Clyde to move there or something like that. One of the challenges I found out, if you go on Wikipedia for Scotland's biggest towns, because they're not actually within the city of Glasgow, it was like Giffnock, Clarkson, Newt Mearns were up there in Scotland's biggest towns, because they've got like 20,000 populations.
All right.
You would have a team from Shetland.
Wow.
You would, because they had a population like combined of all the islands, it was like 25,000 or something like that. So you would, you know, if you were trying to have a top league of 16 and then everybody else can be in some other league, you would have a team from Shetland.
That's where I come. Hamilton, I think it's 53,000, the kind of population. So maybe Shetland, wouldn't it? Because you've got places like Dunfermline and Falkirk. Dunfermline is one of our biggest clubs, no question about it. Like, they've just never been able to make it stick of recent times. But Falkirk are one of the kind of...
So Falkirk would have been in there. I remember Falkirk are really... Yeah. And they also have quite... They've got some disproportionately high number of under 35-year-old males or something like that living.
Right.
I remember in terms of the demographic. You know, if you were picking a place to stick a football team, Falkirk would be, you know, one of your go-to places.
Because it's central belt, or just a wee bit away from, you know, like just some kind of distance so that you have your own identity.
Yeah. So Falkirk should be bigger than and better than they are, based on.
Yeah, John McGlynn's trying that. John McGlynn's getting them there. They were the Invincibles, you know. They were the Invincibles last year. So they're used to winning.
Well, they're beating Hearts.
Yeah. And it was.
There's another manager who surely would be on a sugarly peg.
They'll get cuffed by Pilsen, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure Pilsen will take them apart. So they're not going to win too many games early on, no.
No, but it seems that they're going to stick. Whatever happened to the thing of there was the guy that was the manager, and Naismith was the technical advisor or some crap like that. Whatever happened to that?
Yeah. I don't know if he finished.
You know, the thing they had to do last year to break, so they didn't break UEFA rules about Naismith.
Yeah, I don't know
not
if he's finished his pro license. Naismith maybe finished his pro license last year. I've never heard it mentioned.
No.
Ahead of Thursday, never heard it mentioned that he's not going to be the manager.
Must have got it all sorted. Anyway, that was today. Great performance today. Yeah. It was very Brendan season one or two. It was a controlled version of Ange Ball as well. I thought it was pleasant to watch.
Fascinating. You're almost kind of marking time till Rangers then the Champions League to see the kind of. I mean, I know Rangers aren't necessarily like some you benchmark yourself against, but you just want to see them. In a Rangers game, and you want to see them in a European game, this team, to see where they are. I think it's encouraging. I'd like to think it might be encouraging when we see where they are.
If we can get a decent centre half to play alongside Carter Vickers.
He's actually started the season quite well, Scales. That's what the guy beside me was saying as well. I said, even Scales is looking better.
There was two things he did today. There was one in the second half where Hibs nearly had a chance, and it was just, and I thought stats won't show this up. It's because basically Scales was just in the wrong place. And he was just standing in the wrong place. That was the only reason that Hibs had a chance. But stats wouldn't show that up. And there was another bit that really, really demonstrated the problem. And everybody loves Carter Vickers, but for me, Carter Vickers has a bit of a get out of jail, because all he ever does is pass to Scales. I mean, that's all he does. And if Scales has the ball for more than 2 seconds, then he just eventually just has to punt it, because he just doesn't know what to do. And there was one in the second half where that happened. Katowic has passed it to Scales. Scales is standing there. He then, you know, the countdown clock in his head comes. 3, 2, 1. Oh, I better just hit this. And he just punted it. It was just a complete waste of time. But yes, if we could get a decent centre-half and maybe an improvement on, you know, these people are trying their best. I'm being a bit facetious. They are trying their best. They're just not of the standard that we should have.
I think Brendan Rodgers sent off the message loud and clear. He says, give me a couple of more £6 million players. That was his big hint. Yeah. I don't know if you heard him talking that way on Friday. It was, you know, he laid it on the line. He said, people say you can get Matt O'Reilly, you get him for 1.5, sell him for 25. He said, but if you get me players at 6 million, I can sell them for 40.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I've told you before about the stats about if you're a club of Celtic size and you sign someone below 3 million quid, he's got a 16% chance of becoming a first team regular and or selling for profit. And with the new financial rules, the selling for profit becomes even more essential. But yeah. If you sign at Celtic's level, if you sign it above 6 million quid, you get an 89% chance. So why wouldn't you? I mean, why wouldn't you? We've got the money. We can afford it.
I don't think there's any players. There only has been 4 or 5, has there? But the Celtic have signed for more than 6 million. But there's not been any failures as of yet, has there?
No, that's why.
I think Jota, Julien. Julien, mate, for some people, but the injuries and such like. But Julien had.
It was the injury that really did for him.
It was impact. Julien.
Edward.
Edward. That's it. Is that the 4?
I mean, to be fair to the club, I know that that is the price band they have been looking, 6 to 8 million.
No, that's what I'd heard. Sorry, what am I talking about? Of course, then you've got Sutton, you've got Lennon. Well, Lennon was 5.75, was he? And you've got Hartson. So Sutton and Hartson were 6 million as well.
Here's the thing I did, because
all 6 of them successful.
So there's a new, I'd lost it. There's a website that does football inflation. So it doesn't just do, you know how there's a Bank of England calculator that you can go into, right? And you put in a figure and you put in a year and it tells you what that money is in today's money, right? Bank of England inflation calculator, right? But there's a website that does the football inflation calculator and I'd lost it and I managed to find it. So Alan Stubbs would be the equivalent of us signing someone for 32 million quid in today's football transfer money.
Wow. Yeah, he was he 3.5 from memory?
4.5.
Was it 4.5 right back then? That was a lot of money. Yeah, you forgot. Yep. Forget sometimes they were still spending a lot of money in players.
Yeah. So Sutton, Hartson, Lennon, they'd be the equivalent of 20-odd million pound signings now.
Of course, when you think about it, why wouldn't they be, aye? Yeah. 2 decades.
Anyway, we'll see how 2 weeks left of the transfer window. So we'll see how that goes. We all enjoyed the game. And Andrew, I'll say thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are 2 types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
sweet love, bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.